Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. Today, a little more on the domestic side, especially as we're now just 2 months away from a midterm election day, and two of those races have our attentions in the first two martinis today. One of the Senate seats the Republicans are definitely hoping to pick up is in Alaska. Mark Begich is the Democrat that currently holds a seat there, but it's usually a pretty red state. And Dan Sullivan, the former Attorney General of the state of Alaska, won the GOP nomination. And the campaign seemed to be going relatively well for Senator Begich, but just in the past several days, it has really blown up in his face, mainly because of this ad.
I'm Mark Begich, and I approve this message.
I want to show you a crime scene. I was on the Anchorage Police Force for 20 years. I don't know how long Dan Sullivan lived in Alaska, but I know what he did as Attorney General. He let a lot of sex offenders get off with light sentences. One of them got out of prison and is now charged with breaking into that apartment building, murdering a senior couple, and sexually assaulting their two-year-old granddaughter. Dan Sullivan should not be a U.S. Senator.
And so the name of this criminal is Jerry Active. The process for which his plea bargain was reduced and he was let out of prison started before Sullivan became Attorney General. And by the time he did take office, the gears were already in motion. And even PolitiFact, Jim, has given this a pants-on-fire designation, and Begich has finally been forced to pull it down, largely due to the fact that the family involved is horrified that this has become a campaign issue.
Well, that's the thing. As listeners are listening to that ad, I'm sure they're thinking, that poor family. And to have that brought out and allegedly turned into this major campaign issue without their permission is what makes this go beyond, typical, mudslinging hardball politics. But as you pointed out, that apparently this case occurred before Sullivan became Attorney General. So he did not have any actually involvement in this decision. The way the narrator speaks, it really sounds as if Sullivan is responsible for this horrific crime. So one, it's nothing to do with Sullivan himself. And two, if you're going to do that, you really got to reach out to the family first, because otherwise you're taking it, you're spraying it across the airwaves up in Alaska. This has been one of the quieter, interesting races of this cycle. People who are not that into politics will look at this and just conclude that the incumbent Democratic senator is just a jerk. You don't do something like this. It's just bad ethics. This is not just a matter of it's an ineffective political argument. It's just you're a bad person if you run an ad like this. One, for the falsehood, and two, for dragging a family through something like this without their permission. It also seems like a panic move. So we'll see if things this reflects in the numbers for Dan Sullivan in the near future. But again, it's nice to see the response. And I guess you can give, a molecule of credit to the Democratic campaign for finally pulling the ad after this furious reaction.
Yeah, certainly the case. So if you're wondering why it's the good martini, it's because the Democrats are on the ropes here, not for the fact that the family was dragged through it or Sullivan was falsely accused. On to the bad martini in a very odd way, but the Democrats seem to be really good at odd things like this, Jim. In Kansas, oddly enough, the Republican governor, Sam Brownback, a former senator that a lot of folks I think are familiar with, is in a very tough race for re-election as governor. And Pat Roberts, the three-term senator, is in a very tough race for re-election. He had a fairly difficult primary just a few weeks ago, and now he had been running against Democratic nominee Chad Taylor, as well as a fairly popular independent who apparently has in the past affiliated himself with both the Democrats and the Republicans, named Greg Orman. Well, last night, Chad Taylor announced at the last second that he is not going to be running in this race any longer. And according to a PPP poll, which leans Democrat, Orman, in a head-to-head matchup in a poll taken a couple weeks ago, leads Roberts by 10 points. So this is suddenly a very difficult race for Republicans potentially to hang on to.
It is. We should point out that apparently there is some question as to whether Chad Taylor can actually get off the ballot. Apparently, they didn't read the statute very closely, because to get off the ballot, you have to not merely, say, I want to get off the ballot, and also provide cause. So there are two possibilities. One is that because his, withdrawal letter doesn't mention anything, Republicans will be arguing with some good reason that you can't just be uninterested. The statute says you have to be incapable of fulfilling the duties of office. And the second point is that the Kansas state law may require the vacancy after the primary election to be filled, meaning the Democrats have to have somebody on that ballot line. Now, I suppose they could theoretically, you know, try to put in Orman, but that certainly takes away the possibility that he's an independent, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I don't think this is necessarily the slam dunk that the Democrats think it is. It does give Republicans in Kansas something to think about. They also have some trouble for Brownback in the gubernatorial race. And so it may take some effort and some, you know, investment of finances and time and things like that on the part of Republicans to keep this Senate seat and the gubernatorial mansion in Kansas. And it's not a place Republicans expect it to be. I think it was Sean Trend who put it very well. He said, look, Kansas being Kansas, I'm not going to be certain that that Pat Roberts is in trouble. It's a heavily Republican state. It's been, back in the 30s, I think was the last time the Democrats won a statewide race, statewide Senate race out there. Having said that, Roberts having that whole residency issue, an independent, non-democratic challenger, those are the circumstances in which a long-time incumbent Republican could lose. We will see how it shakes out. But a little bit of stress for Republicans in a spot they didn't think they'd have to be worrying about.
Jim, if regular listeners are familiar, I'm guessing they already know who you think the Democrats will put on the ballot if, in fact, they are forced to put a new candidate on the ballot.
Well, so the first thought is Frank Lautenberg, despite the fact that he has passed away. There's kind of, there's a joke that, you know, in case of emergency, break glass, and they just roll out Lautenberg because of the Torricelli maneuver back in 2002. If you have a sufficiently unpopular incumbent, you just switch out the candidate at the last second so Republicans can't argue their case, and their entire argument against the previous candidate is moot. So somewhere Doug Forrester is just, swearing at the heavens right now.
Doesn't that new Democratic candidate in Montana have a twin or something that lives in Kansas? I think that
There you go. Yes. Or you know who they could run? They could run John Walsh out in Montana because he's looking for work. And how about Kathleen Sebelius?
Oh, yeah.
She's got a fantastic record. I will do for Kansas what I did for our healthcare system.
Oh, man. All right. On to the crazy martini now. And Jim, I just think John Kerry might have been listening yesterday to the three martini lunch because you had some mildly nice things to say about his rhetoric as it pertains to ISIS as compared to how the president has characterized the threat. And so he's bound and determined to make sure that he gets on his normal side with you. And this was a speech talking about one of his Muslim outreach personnel at the State Department. And as he explained the importance of the job, John Kerry started talking about the importance of religion, especially as it pertains to the environment.
Our fates are inextricably linked on the environment. For many of us, respect for God's creation also translates into a duty to protect and sustain his first creation, Earth, the planet. Before God created man, he created heavens and earth. Confronting climate change is, in the long run, one of the greatest challenges that we face. And you can see this duty or responsibility laid out in scriptures clearly, beginning in Genesis. And Muslim-majority countries are among the most vulnerable. Our response to this challenge ought to be rooted in a sense of stewardship of Earth. And for me and for many of us here today, that responsibility comes from God.
So, Jim, if anyone's still awake after listening to nearly a minute of John Kerry, he clarified.
Is our listenership too high, Greg? You kind of wanted to drive people away on that?
He clarified that the Earth was the planet. That's important. And
good.
Then,
yes.
I'm sure if it had been
fact check, true.
I'm sure if it had been a Republican Secretary of State, the creation rhetoric would have been completely lampooned on MSNBC, but we should probably give him some credit for that. But the idea that his biggest concern or one of his biggest concerns with the Muslim world is to help them adapt to climate change and thwart the effects of it might seem a little odd given the other threats facing that part of the world and the United States in general.
Let me put it this way. Let me summarize what John Kerry just said. To our Muslim friends, God has put us on a mission, not your God, but our God. And our mission is to be stewards of you, to save you from the earth roasting up. You may have noticed that you already live in a desert, but it's going to become an even hotter desert. And thus, we are here to save, and we are nothing like the crusaders of the last administration who believed they were on a mission to God to remake your lives. And Like, what's intriguing is he never grasped these kinds of contradictions and ironies and things like that. It's just self-evident that he's on the right side of history, to use the Obama phrase, and that he's the good guy, and that other people will greet him that way, and he just can't get around his head the idea that, you know, that might come across as condescending or obnoxious or anything like that. So there you go. I will probably refrain from praising John Kerry again because, you know, he tends to get him all cocky.
Just last month, he was giving a speech out in Hawaii. I was reading this in prep for the story, and he listed climate change. It was hard to tell whether he said the greatest challenge right now or one of the greatest challenges right now. So, you know.
Was this when he went around, I believe, to Indonesia and a couple of other countries, flying around the world to tell them to reduce their carbon emissions?
Yes.
I do remember. I remember calculating it was like 14 tons of carbon from this trip. And it was like, you know, had you video conferenced, Mr. Secretary, it would have saved a lot of, you know, saved a lot of trees.
Jim, have a great day.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.